Monster Man, Episode 120, Penanggalan to Phantom Stalker. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, I've lost my voice. Also, I'm getting started with the P section of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. We'll be talking about three monsters from that section. Before we do that, though, I want to thank some new Patreon backers. These are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. Of today's donors, some are new patrons, and some have also changed their patron level so that they're now at a higher level, and I want to thank all of them, so thank you very much, Goblin's Henchman, thank you very much, Tim Edwards, and thank you very much, Brian Orban. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/monsterman, and if, like these backers, and if, like some of today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is all about the Deities and Demigods book and using religion and mythology in your games. I know that $1 bonus content has been a bit light on the ground lately, but I haven't had as much time to record. I'm going to try and put up some new stuff. I really appreciate the support of my patrons at all levels and want to make sure that they all get something back for it. All right, let's get started with some monsters. The first monster on the list is the Penanggalan. And this is a creature from the folklore of Southeast Asia, and it was adapted for Dungeons & Dragons by Stephen Hellman. The Penanggalan comes, the name Penanggalan anyway, I think comes from Malaysia. There are other creatures with similar names in Indonesia, in Thailand, in the Philippines, and I believe also in Laos and Cambodia. And in Dungeons & Dragons, the Penanggalan is undead. In the folkloric version, I'm not so sure about that. I think it's more like it's kind of a witch. A Penanggalan is, by day, it just looks like a beautiful woman. And by night, it is a flying head with all the guts and organs dangling off of the neck. So the head, you know, comes off the body, trailing all these organs behind it like tentacles. And it's an absolutely horrific image. And it flies around, drinking the blood of innocent people as they sleep. And in some, at least, of the images I've seen of the Penanggalan, I guess that's maybe the idea is that, you know, there may actually be some kind of visible dividing line at the neck, but you can't see that because during the day, the Penanggalan, in its human form, is wearing a headscarf, right, that covers everything but its face. So, yeah, like I said, in some versions of the folklore, the Penanggalan is a witch and is doing this intentionally. In some versions, it's a curse that gets laid on a person. And in D&D, it's an undead and can include things like, I think one of the ways that you get turned into a Penanggalan is to be killed by a Penanggalan. It's a wonderful monster. I mean, it's perfect. It has everything. It has this absolutely horrific appearance. It's got the mystery aspect of, like, oh, who is the Penanggalan during the day? It's got some slightly complicated rules for how it sort of hypnotizes people. You would want to be reading up on the Penanggalan before the actual scenario. It's got all your traditional vampire hunting methods, right? So the Penanggalan has to soak its guts in vinegar in order to fit them back in its neck hole when the head comes back to the body, right? To shrink them, like basically has to pickle them. And it'll die if it spends too long outside of the body. So you can, you know, even if you find its lair, you can smash its vinegar jars with the butts of your pole axes, and then, you know, run away laughing. And then, you know, if it spends too long outside the body, it'll die. Or if the sunlight touches the head when it's separated from the body, it'll die. And just a bunch of other stuff. So there are lots of, like, clever folkloric ways to kill it. One of those, which is not present in the Fiend Folio, but which I found during my research, by which I mean I just stuck the word Penanggalan into YouTube and, you know, went through Penanggalan videos listening only to the ones where the presenter had what I take to be a Malaysian accent. And that said, that the idea that the belief is that if you find the body of a Penanggalan, what you do is you take a bunch of broken glass and you stuff it in the neck hole so that when the Penanggalan comes back and fits its organs into the neck hole, they'll be all slashed up by the broken glass, which is just absolutely horrible as the Penanggalan in general. Penanggalan, fantastic, is rather similar in some ways to the Berbalang. not in terms of what it, not the Burbalang as represented in the Fiend Folio, but the folkloric Burbalang, which also kind of has as its base the detached, flying, evil spell-casting head of a sorcerer. And the illustrations by Russ Nicholson are top-notch as usual. Next up, we have the Pernicon, created by Mary Patterson. The Pernicon is an insect, and it bites you, and they come in big swarms, and not only do they do a little bit of damage by biting you, they also just kind of drain away constitution. And basically what happens is they jump up on you and they lock their, like, mandibles into your flesh. And then they just sort of cling onto you. With, you know, their mandibles are stuck into you while their mouth is working greedily away, sucking out your blood and other vital fluids, which is why your constitution declines. And in fact, even once they're dead, you can still take further damage from them because their jaws lock in place and the Pernicon has to be pulled off. Which will do you another D4 points of damage. So they can actually, I mean, they're big. They can actually do quite a good amount of damage. There are actually insects that do this, aren't there, where, you know, they bite on something and then they sort of feed off of it. And even when they die, they have to be very carefully removed. Yeah, I want to say that ticks are like that, but I could be wrong. But I tried to look this up and, you know, if anyone ever looks at my search history, like, it's going to be really weird. I look up a lot of stuff for this show, and also just I'm kind of a curious person, and also I have all my other writing projects. My search history must make me look like a lunatic. But anyway, I tried to look up insect jaws lock, but I got a bunch of weird stuff, but nothing directly relevant. I'm sure it's true, though, or at least it's true in, like, the kinds of things that children tell each other on the playground, and that is an excellent basis for something being true in Dungeons & Dragons. So I like the Pernicon. I'd actually never really considered it before, but I'm going to try and put some biting insects in my next game. I mean, I run a post-apocalyptic exploration-based game, so there's no excuse not to have a swarm of biting insects. And my players, one of my players might hear this before the next game, in which case, you keep quiet. Finally, we have the Phantom Stalker, created by Ian Livingston. And this is another creature that appears in the Fiend Factory miniatures line, but it doesn't seem to have an entry in the Fiend Factory column in White Dwarf, which puts it into the company of things like the Salaman or Fire Newts. And I wonder if it was not, you know, done from a miniature or done from the concept sketches from the miniature. Anyway, the Invisible Stalker is basically like an energy being from the elemental plane of fire, acts as kind of a bodyguard to someone who summons it, and it must carry out that person's commands to the letter. It's not stupid. It has some leeway to try and, like, observe the spirit of them, but it can't just rebel against them. You can see a situation where a Phantom Stalker might not be too happy to follow the orders of some maniac, but they don't really have a choice about it. They also don't really have a choice to avenge them. So when you kill the person who summoned a Phantom Stalker, you might think you had done pretty well because the Phantom Stalkers will immediately disappear. But they come back a little while later, and now they know precisely where you are because they might not be there when you kill the target, I guess, or I don't know, this is just what they do. But it seems to me that it's meant to lull you into a false sense of security because the death of their summoner places a final demand on them, which is that they have to avenge that person's death. And honestly, knowing that might discourage a lot of people from killing evil wizards. You can definitely see the locals being like, oh yeah, help us brave heroes, for the evil sorcerer lives in yon cave, and none of us are brave enough to oppose him. But if only some stout ruffians with longbows +1 and bohemian ear spoons would destroy him, they would be well rewarded, right? And actually, the villagers could take this guy out. They just don't want to deal with his Phantom Stalkers. That'd be kind of fun. So the Phantom Stalker's a pretty good monster. It's got a great look. I like its head, which kind of reminds me of the Aquaman villain, Black Manta, who is maybe not the world's great villain, but has a real sleek, cool-looking design with some sort of 70s sci-fi kind of elements in it. So the Phantom Stalker is, a pretty good... It's not a monster that's going to drive a story, right? But you want your evil wizard to have kind of distinguishable tiers of henchmen, and one of those should be, you know, a magical threat of some kind that everybody can get good and worried about, and I think the Phantom Stalker fits neatly into that category. So those are the first three monsters in the PE chapter of the Fiend Folio. Please join me next time as we close out the chapter with two more creatures, including a really strange one, on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.